Hey everybody, Ferran Wozniak, your host of the IASIS podcast. I have the chairman of the board, the thunder from down under, Darren Freestone. Darren, Mr. Chairman of the board, how are you doing? Well, it's evening for me, probably morning for you. How are you doing this day?
It is morning for me, Woz. It's about 10:30 in the morning here. But yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for being a guest on the show. We have a lot to talk about. We have the Australian event, the IASIS Australian event coming up in October. We'll get to that a little bit later. We already talked about when are you. Where are you in Australia?
So I live in Melbourne, Australia. Okay. If you think of Australia as looking like, a little shape like that, then we're at the bottommost part on the east coast, I suppose, and the furthest south you can get before you get to Tasmania.
Okay.
So, which is a little island below, and yeah, it's actually a nice day today. We don't get a lot of those, but it's pretty nice today outside.
So we're in America. We're coming up on our autumn or fall, as we say here. In the States, you guys are going into your spring, right?
Yes, spring. Yeah, September is the start of spring for us here. So, just kicking it off now. Looking forward to the summer months to come. They're fantastic. Can't wait.
That's good. You said you're in Southern Australia, and forgive my geography, my ignorance towards it. You could probably fly to Antarctica then, correct? Ish. You guys are pretty close.
Yeah, it's not really on my bucket list. if I'm honest. it's not that far, not sort of place you get to very easily. I think maybe the tip of South Africa gets you a lot closer than we are, but it's definitely the next landmass south of Tasmania and south of Australia.
Okay, I was just doing some pre-research and I saw that today. I figured I'd drop that tidbit. Mr. Chairman, Darren, obviously you're part of IASIS, obviously on the board of directors, the chairman of the board. You do have a law enforcement history, correct?
I do, yes.
Expand as much as you can on being, as we say in the United States, a cop.
Yeah, no worries. So not a cop myself, civilian employee throughout my law enforcement career. Started with the police, the Queensland Police, up in the state of Queensland. Did about 5 years there, mainly child sexual abuse cases, and moved to a federal agency, which is an intelligence-based agency, which is mainly serious and organized crime type of work. And between those two roles, I think I did maybe about 18 years. And I've also worked a bit in the private sector as well. So,
okay, you mentioned the intelligence agency. Is it like the United States' Central Intelligence Agency, or more like a Federal Bureau of Investigation, where you guys are just handling internal threats, internal issues?
Yeah, it's more like serious and organized crime investigations is what we were doing, and so intelligence agency, but on the low side, I suppose, the high side of all those three letter agencies that you hear about. So not quite like that, but more the high side.
Okay, and then you did mention regulatory, and what scope does that actually mean for your country?
So I did a couple of years with ASIC, that's the Australian Securities and Investments Commission.
Oh, wow.
And they're a regulator, so a little bit like the SEC over in the USA, and mainly things like insider trading investigations, that type of work as well. So I've had a fair mix over my career, and all those roles have been digital forensics, but also try to bring a little bit of software development and R&D and everything into what I do. It's a kind of a natural expansion of DF, according to me. But definitely a passion of mine as well.
Nice. And speaking of passions, obviously, you're high up on the on IASIS. You're going to have some digital forensics passion and know-how. You already mentioned software development, research development. Are you more a computer guy? Are you more the mobile phone guy? Network intrusion? If you had to go down a road in digital forensics incident response, what's your lane? so to speak.
Yeah, I haven't really worked that much in incident response, really. So primarily digital forensics, computers, phones, obviously. I mean, going back to phones in the days of, where it was really just a SIM card acquisition. We had SIM cards in Australia a lot longer than you guys did, I believe, over there.
Yeah.
You guys used to use the CDMA network, I believe, and we've had GSM and SIM cards here for a very, very long time. So, yeah, going back to the very, very dumb phones before the smartphones, right up until now with all the smartphones. But, definitely enjoy all that work, and I wouldn't say I specialize necessarily in any of it, but just, generally pretty skilled in all of it.
It's just now that the United States is keeping up with the rest of the world in mobile phone technology as far as talking on the phone. It used to be my phone would not work overseas. I could maybe go to Canada, or I could go to Canada, Mexico, but if I went anywhere in Europe or anywhere else in the world, our phones wouldn't work. Thank goodness, finally, I just have to buy an international plan and things are done. But Europe, the whole rest of the world has been ahead of the United States in cell phone communications. I do not know why this country has taken so long. That's a whole other podcast for somebody I'm ever probably going to have on Verizon or AT&T. You mentioned research.
Yeah, for sure.
You mentioned research and development, reverse engineering. Just quickly expand on your passions for that. What that takes. That is way above my knowledge base. So I'm actually curious for myself. What the research you do and reverse engineering is that you do.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved software development. Even before I got into law enforcement, working for law enforcement agencies, I was always tinkering with code and found it engaging and a lot of fun. It was great to find a role like in digital forensics where, you've got software tools, but there's certain areas where you don't have tools and there's gaps in the market.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you can, yeah. So even in my first role at Queensland Police all those years ago, so we're going back to the late 90s now, I was able to, pull together tools that would do things like access the registry, Windows registry, things like accessing ICQ back then was a big, remember that was, ICQ was the bee's knees. So, deleted chats and things like that and reporting them and everything else. And it was just a great natural fit that you could, bring those skills to that field and apply them and, really help the team out. So my role kind of evolved to the point where I could, I was working cases as well, but I could also sit back and help everyone else work their case. As soon as they hit a challenge, then jump in and help write a solution to get them over the hump.
Excellent. Kyle hates it when I say excellent more than like three times in a row. And Kyle's our production guy. Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, IACE is chairman of the board. You've been an IACE member now for maybe 23 years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think it's pretty close. Yeah,
I've been in law enforcement for almost 25 years, and I'm just touched 49 years old, and you're a young lad yourself. So, were you just fresh out of college or in college or university?
Yeah.
I guess when you joined or what?
Yeah, I was straight out of university, but also I'm not that young, and I'm right behind you there. So. I used to be young. I used to be the youngest guy in the room around in IACE circles at one point, and that's a long time ago. And loving watching the new generation coming through and how passionate they are and skillful they are. It's a fantastic thing. But yeah, long-term service with IACE. I think I worked it out a while back. When I finish up on the board on my current term, I guess, when it finishes up, I think I will have been volunteering for IACE longer than I haven't. So sort of half my life. That's going to be a momentous day for sure. It's something I'm very proud of, that I've been able to stay as an active volunteer for that long and give back to an organization that's, given so much to me.
Yeah, good. I just reached a halfway point in my life. I live now in the United States. I lived in South Carolina, which is obviously in the southern United States, just as long as I have lived. I was born and raised in Western New York, Niagara Falls, New York, the big waterfall thing we have. Go Bills. I've been a Southerner more than I've been, as we call in this country, a Yankee. So that's I understand that as the half-life goes. When you started in IASIS, did you start as a student and then work your way up like the usual echelon where you just become like a row coach, a trainer, teaching classes and move on, you know, and just progress from there?
Yeah, my journey was a little different to the average. I started, so IASIS was first discovered by my agency, by a colleague of mine, Peter Kingsley. Many people in IASIS will remember Peter Kingsley, top clerk. Hi, Peter, if you're watching, listening. And, you know, he discovered IASIS, and it was exactly what we needed at that agency at that time. We didn't have a budget to work with. We didn't have a place to get our training, certainly not our certifications, you know, resources, chatting to other members and helping, you know, solve problems, things like the listserv. We didn't have anything like that, and so it was a real godsend to discover IASIS. And we were able to send over two people as students, and this is going back to, I think, 2001. And I didn't go over that year, but Peter, another colleague, did. And, you know, Peter made a splash, made a lot of friends, which is great, and got invited to come back the following year, 2002, and teach an advanced Linux class. And we were using Linux a lot in our office at the time, you know, because we didn't have a lot of budget, we didn't have a lot of software. We would use it as a platform to, you know, acquire disks and do examinations and whatnot. So, I went and accompanied Peter over to the US, to Orlando in 2002. So my first, I guess, exposure was doing the certification remotely at the same time as, you know, the other guys were doing it. But then teaching for IASIS in 2002. So that was my first real experience. We did that for 2 years. So teaching it both weeks for 2 years. And then I transitioned over into the basic class as a trainer and road coach.
And that's a meteoric ascent for you. And I think, well, I've known you now we're in 2024. I've known you now for 3 years. But you've been on the board of directors in some capacity for 6 years now, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, so five now, and then the last year of my second term right now. So I'll finish up that term, and that'll be 6 years in sort of April next year.
Okay, and I'm, you know, doing podcasts and stuff like that. I'm not part of the, I wouldn't call it the in crowd, but I. Can you explain the mystery for any IASIS members? What the board of directors, what the board of directors does, and also your role as chairman of the board. What is your role on the board of directors and governing this international global agency?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and yeah, it's one that there's probably a little bit of mystery about. You know, it's the board aren't sort of always out there, talking about their activities and their achievements. But it's great to get an opportunity like this to actually talk a little bit about, you know, the board and what they do. And so there's 11 directors, made up of 11 in total. Yeah, and from currently all over the world. We have myself in Australia. We have Brent Whale in New Zealand. We have Alan Thomas in the UK, we have Todd Bignicolo in Canada, and the rest of our directors across all parts of the US. So, very well covered. And effectively, I mean, you've got your officer roles, so president, vice president, chairman, secretary, treasurer, and then the remainder of the director roles are specializing in the committees that they run. So training director, ethics, certification, standards, marketing, etc. So that's, and their roles are to really manage those committees. They're large committees. They have a lot of volunteers under most of those, and each is a valuable function of IASIS, and these are all mentioned in our bylaws and our policies. And then the officer roles do pretty much what you'd expect. You know, the president is the face of the organization. The VP, backs up the president, and VP does a lot at the moment. There's a lot of things we don't really know what to do, so we ask the VP to do it. And Brent's VP right now, and he's been doing a fantastic job in that role. And so, secretary takes care of all the paperwork and filing and minutes and meetings and everything administratively for the organization. And the treasurer takes care of the books and manages our bookkeeper and everything like that. So, I mean, that's the roles in a nutshell. But these are elected positions. You have to be a member in good standing. Yep. You have to, get up in front of the membership and ask them for their support to vote for you. And it's none of these positions are appointed as such. Maybe rarely, if there's a vacancy, we might look at a short-term appointment. But otherwise, they're all elected positions. So, you know, the organization really is run by its members and the elected members within it.
It's literally like a corporation where we're stockholders and we elect a board, you know, just like you would a you know, Wall Street 500. I'm not using real terminology, but it's done just like an actual business, an actual corporation. That's exactly, it's almost the same business model, correct? Right?
Yeah, absolutely. The difference being everyone's a volunteer, so everyone else has a day job, unless you're fortunate enough to be retired. You have a day job, and so, you know, it's always about giving what time you can. As I was saying, definitely, it's a global organization, member association, and you know, everybody is a volunteer across the entire organization. In fact, we only have one paid employee, and that is our bookkeeper, and that's a very, very valuable skill set that we hire a person for. But otherwise, everyone from the top to the bottom, everywhere around the organization is a volunteer and gives their time willingly to ISIS.
That's good. I know you mentioned the vice president's position. I know I enjoy every September getting an email from him, because as a volunteer, we you know, one of the ways IASIS gives back is we get, you know, free classes. You can take online courses. I think we offer certification in mobile and Windows Forensic Examiner. There may be a couple more out there, but it's and I don't want to misquote what IASIS has to offer, but one of the benefits of volunteering for IASIS is that IASIS does give back and gives the opportunity to you know, receive free training, which is huge, you know, which is huge. So, but again, you know, it's a volunteer based organization, so that's a nice little kickback, I guess, a little thank you at the end of the year to get some free up to date training. So,
well, just on that was, I mean, that's, you know, I was a part of that decision, but it wasn't sort of, you know, anything that I took care of, but, you know, definitely in support of it, because it's just a fantastic endeavor. It occurred to us at one point, you know, why are we, you know, we can't pay our volunteers, right? We just, honestly, if we switched to some sort of a paid model, it just wouldn't work.
It wouldn't work,
You know, and so, you know, we're not-for-profit and so forth, but why are we charging our members, you know, long-term volunteers who are doing a great job for us? Why are we charging them a membership each year? So, you know, memberships for ISIS aren't expensive anyway. We're talking, you know, $100 or something like that for a year. But why are we taking that off our long-term volunteers? So we started with that and said, you know, anyone who's volunteering for us actively is getting their membership paid. That's a no-brainer for us, really. And then the same makes sense for the training and certifications. You know, you can't always come to our training because you're at our training, up there and teaching it, and you know, and until we have more online options, then, you know, that's you know, getting the class in person. So we'd have a situation where a trainer, really experienced trainer, might take a year off to do some learning at the same event. It's like, well, hang on, that's not you know, that's fine, but it's not ideal, is it? We'd rather keep our trainers training and keep them learning at the same time, but not exactly the same time. So no, it's been a great program to be able to give that back, and I'm very, very jealous of Brent and some of his committees that he has there under VP, the events committee, as well as the volunteer recognition committee, because, you know, they're just fantastic committees, and he gets to do fantastic work, which is to give back to our members those rewards each year, those training classes and free memberships, and it's can't think of a better reason, you know, to not be a volunteer for IASIS when you know, we take care of you guys just as well as the volunteers take care of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And like when this thing airs, Kyle's going to have all the marquees on the bottom on how to be an IASIS volunteer, how to become one. Welcome aboard. Everybody is welcome. Speaking, and obviously, you're from Australia. You're the chairman of the board. And we have, IASIS has an event in Australia, I believe, October 14th. I want to get my dates right. October 14th to the 25th in Melbourne, correct? And that's a sponsor. That's actually an IASIS event in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. You got that perfect. The date's the 14th through the 25th of October. So just over a month away now. It's much anticipated. Been planning this for a good couple of years. And this comes back to other initiatives on the board where, you know, we sat down and worked on a five-year strategic plan where we wanted to be in 5 years. And the board at the time, this is probably 3 years ago now, said that, hey, in 5 years' time, we'd love to be, you know, running training sort of in all three regions of the world. You know, we've got the Americas covered with what we do in Orlando, but to be able to cover Asia Pacific region,
absolutely,
where I'm based here, and also Europe, and with our own events, and being able to actually build up memberships in those areas. ISIS is very strong in the US because we train all the time in the US,
right?
And it's not as strong or as well heard of, and the brand isn't as well known outside. I mean, it's pretty well known across Europe because we've been going over there and doing events with the Olive Group for a number of years now. But in this region, Asia Pacific, probably not as well known. And, you know, and that's understandable because, you know, if they can't access the training as easily, then, you know, it's harder to get the members and to get the certified people and so forth. So we'd really love to see training get run in these regions, you know, each year if possible, eventually, you know. And so we're starting small with an event here next month, and then next year looking at doing our own event in Europe as well. So this is new ground for us. You know, we've done Orlando so many times, and we're very familiar with spinning that operation up, but you know, it's a little bit different going to brand new lands and setting up from scratch. You know, we look for local partners who can assist us with logistics and financials and everything else. And the first of many to come is this event in October in Melbourne next month. So yeah, it's very exciting.
That is great. And I know it, we are offering the basic computer forensic examiner course, the BCFE, right? The meat and potatoes of everything. So that's a 2 week course, same boot camp style as we have in Orlando, correct?
Yeah, basically identical program to what we roll over there. Maybe a slight tweak when it comes to the legal block and things like that, which is, you know, for a different audience. But otherwise, the same training we deploy over there, and the same kind of model where we have, you know, a coach, a rogue coach for every, you know, five or six students. And that way, you know, someone's always up front teaching the class, running you through the materials. And there's always your own little local coach that you can call on to help you with the practical exercises and get you through, you know, over the course of those 2 weeks. You know, it's a lot. 2 weeks is a lot to, you know, is a lot of material to absorb. It's a long time to keep focus up. And I think that model has worked so well for us over in Orlando for so many years. And I think it'll serve us really well here as well. Just on BCFE, I mean, it's a fantastic program, and you know, BCFE stands for Basic Computer Forensic Examiner. Basic is probably a word that we wish we hadn't put in there, but BCFE is so well known now, we're probably never going to change it. But I prefer foundational. You know, it's you know, some people might think basic, I'm beyond basic, I've been doing this for a few years. I mean, I come to this training as a trainer and sit in the back of the room or teach my block and work with my students. You know, many, many times, 20-something times I've been doing this. Sure. I learn something new every single time.
You always do.
Especially in week two. It's all about, you know, artifacts and the latest and greatest stuff. And ISIS keep their material up to date, which is fantastic. And so it's always cutting edge. And, you know, the first week, less so because it's more file systems and things that haven't changed a lot. A lot of the foundational stuff, which is good to get a refresher on, certainly. But that week two material is very up to date, and you know, it's so useful to be sitting in one of those classrooms. So yeah, I don't like the B in BCFE that much, I just want to make sure I, you know, communicate to people that it's foundational, yes, but absolutely, you can still learn a lot through that program even if you've been doing this a while.
I know, I know in Orlando, the big room, as we call it for BCFE, they like to keep it like a meat locker. Are you guys going to at least make it up to like human temperatures? Like, I don't want 80 degrees or anything like that, but anything above 60 probably. But you do have to keep the students awake, so I understand why it's 45 degrees in the big room in Orlando, and it is also Orlando. So maybe like a comfortable 68 degrees or something. I don't know. That's just, you know, it is. You could hang cows in that thing and let them dry age.
In a previous role of mine, the facilities manager guy, you know, he had a quote that he used all the time, and he said that air conditioning was more difficult to balance than it is to, you know, put a man on the moon. And I think he's absolutely right, and I remember that to this day. It really is tough. The last thing you want to do is be hot.
You're sweating
in a classroom.
Yeah.
And you have to just match, especially in a room as big as what we do over there, you just have to be so granular with any changes you make. Otherwise, just from AM to PM, and 1 degree on a thermostat. I don't think that'll be an issue so much in this room. It's a fantastic facility. So it's being hosted at Carstens with a K.
Okay.
That's a training location here in Melbourne. I actually went out and helped the events committee a little bit and scouted around for locations. And I was so impressed when I found this particular space, because it's the model that we like for Oasis is a really wide classroom.
Yes.
So not deep, very, very wide, multiple screens. And that way the person in the back row isn't too far from the front row, the front where the screens are. And so you don't see a lot of rooms like that outside of sort of hotel ballrooms and things like that. Whereas this room's really well geared up, and it's one of those ones where you can expand the wall and open up new sections. And so it's absolutely perfect. And there's nothing quite like it in any of the other training venues, across Australia and New Zealand. So we got quite lucky with that one, and I think it's going to be fantastic.
That's good. Is it a downtown setting where, you know, after class for lunches, people could venture out and walk the streets, cafes, shops, what have you not, restaurants, pubs, all that
kind
of stuff?
Yes, so it's right in the middle of the Melbourne CBD, that's Central Business District, but that's the equivalent of what you would call downtown in US cities. And so, the hotel we have the staff staying at, and any students who wish to stay there as well, is just a few doors up. The Adena, a few doors up from the venue, so literally getting to work in the morning for our training staff will be effortless. And you're right in the middle of Melbourne CBD. You've got access to hundreds of restaurants and great places to get out and grab a quick lunch at lunchtime. Plenty of food courts and everything like that. So I don't think that'll be an issue. And Melbourne's one of they always call it the most livable city in Australia. I know I'm going to make enemies of Sydney and Brisbane when I say things like that, so I'm going to stop short of going too far. But it's a very livable city, especially outside of the winter months, where it's just that little bit less warm than you would want it to be. Not cold by US standards, there's no blizzards or anything.
Sure.
There's no plowing your driveways and anything like that happening. But it definitely could be warmer, and we'd prefer it to be warmer. But no, the summers are magnificent. Spring should be fine. And it's a great city to bounce around. Plenty of things to do. I hope any of the training staff who bring their partners along as well, which is something that's quite a cultural thing here at Oasis, is if you're coming for a couple of weeks, hey, bring your family.
Absolutely.
Along, get the families together. It's always fantastic, so we'll make sure we take care of any families that come on down here as well.
That is awesome. Now I know seats are going fast, but seats still are available, and if it does sell out, you guys could go over capacity for what you budget for. So their seats are still available for people who want to sign up, correct?
Yeah, like I was just trying to, get a definitive sort of answer on that this morning. And I think by the time this airs, I think maybe the class will have closed. But by all means, still reach out to our local partner, who's the one selling the class. That's MCAA. So info@mcaa.com.au.
Beautiful. Kyle will put it down. Yep.
Thank you, Kyle. Yep. Click here. And talk to Gary over at MCAA. There are logistic issues, so if we haven't ordered enough laptops and everything like that, then it could be an issue. But otherwise, I think certainly reach out if you have interest in the class.
With everything we talked about, we would not. There's no secret that we all use software. We're not going into hexadecimal by ourselves and anything like that. With modern technology, we're using software. With software comes vendors. So we have you guys. I keep saying you guys. We have vendors for this event. Can you expand maybe a little bit on our vendor list? And I know when we have vendors, there's freebies. Students always get something or a lot for their money with this. So can we talk about the vendors and also, you know, what it is the students get to bring back with them after the class?
No, that's a good point. Well, so, I mean, you know, vendors and sponsors, for lack of a better term, we have the software vendors in our field are all, mostly are all very, very good supporters of IASIS and have been for a very long time. You know, they come to our events in Orlando, yep. They get a table, they get to talk to our students, they put on, food and beverage present their products. And it's been a beautiful partnership between IASIS and all the various digital forensics software vendors or hardware vendors over a very long time, almost since its inception. And it's just so valuable to have them there. As a student, I've seen students do this. They'll walk into our event and they'll walk up to one of those those pull-up signs, and it has all of the logos of the vendors on there, and yes. they'll just stand there yes. staring at them. I know that one, I haven't heard of this one yet. And you can just see their thought processes, and you can see the way they're getting familiar with, all the different tools that could be available to them in the industry. A lot of these people brand new, to digital forensics.
Sure.
And it was just such a wonderful thing to have them supporting our events. With this one over here, it's just a small event that we're kicking off. But, we've got Get Data, they're Australian based themselves, and they will be coming out and actually being present at the event. Having a table and talking directly to the students of the class in the breaks and so forth. So that's incredibly valuable. But honestly, we our marketing area that does a fantastic job, manages the relationships that we have with all of our sponsors, and we tell them that we're doing an event like this, and they just say, well, how can we help? So we pass the hat around, so to speak, and the vendors are just brilliant, and they'll give up licenses for their yes. tools. And provide those to the students just for being an attendee. And sometimes you hear about, this class has X amount of value thrown in or something. You hear these terms sort of thrown around quite a bit, but this is, I'm not exaggerating here. This is genuine value. This is actual licenses, fully functional, not trial licenses,
sure.
fully functional
yep.
licenses yep. of software tools. And I would like to mention them if I can sort of individually briefly, but these licenses are being provided to all the attendees of this class simply for being an attendee of the
yes.
class. So I did the math just before, and in total, we're talking just shy of $28,000 worth of software every student that attends this class will be receiving in terms of software licenses and other benefits.
And that's $28,000 American dollars.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wow.
Absolutely.
That's a
so,
chunk. That is a chunk, yeah.
For the Australian listeners, that's about 41,000 Australian dollars worth of value just for attending this class. So it's absolutely huge. And I mentioned Get Data already, providing a one-year license for Forensic Explorer and Mount Image Pro. We've got Monolith Forensics, who are providing a year license of their case management software that they have. We've got Passmark OS Forensics, providing a one-year license of their tool. Paraben Corporation, they're providing E3, 9-month license. We've got Arsenal with their Recon suite, and they're providing all their Arsenal tools for a 6-month license. And they're also offering a whole one-year license as a door prize. So door prizes is something we do at IASIS as well, where just it's a little bit of a trick to ensure that everyone comes back from break
yes,
on time,
exactly.
but just to make sure that when they get back, we'll raffle off a prize of some sort, and you got to be in it to win it.
You
and
have
so
to be there to
the
win
room.
It. That's the key. You have to be there to win it. Yep.
So just literally coming, you're going to get all this value, and if you also come back quickly after break, you could get additional value on top of that. We have Extero. They're providing a one-year license for FTK,
nice. Yep.
And that includes their software, their training, and their certification. So they're literally, they're opening up the door to everything that they offer for a year of all you can eat of those three items, which we thank all the vendors. And Datego Global, they're providing a one-year license of their suite as a door prize, and a 6-month license to all students that attend the program. And then just finally, we have CDFS. They're a local training organization in Australia. Well, they do a lot of different services, but training is certainly one of them. And they're going to provide the mice and some other benefits as well. So everything that's getting, you know, all the vendors, just they hear about it. They say, what can we do? How can we get involved? How can we help out? And it's absolutely amazing to see that kind of thing come together. And so for what it turns out to be a $6,000 Australian dollar class, you know, you're walking away with $41,000 worth of value.
You're getting your money's worth. You mentioned Datego and Extero. Both the Datego episode hasn't aired yet. It'll probably it'll air in the future. And I had Extero, we did a dual podcast, you know, across promotional thing. And just a thing for conference goers, class goers. Both those companies, and actually every company that IASIS has, the swag, the stuff we all get, the socks, the water bottles. It's very high end. I mean, you're not getting pencils and beer koozies. You're getting actually great notebook. I mean, the quality of, you know, of just swag you get from these training events is incredible. I know I cleaned up at Techno Security and I brought stuff home. I was like computer forensic Santa Claus when I went back to the office. I was like, here, kids, you know, take. I mean, it's incredible swag. That's just another little perk. So when you pack for swag.
No, look, and swag's actually something I'm quite passionate about. It might sound, you know, amusing, but to be passionate about something like swag, but you know, there's good and there's bad. There's the stuff that you use once and you throw it in the trash.
Sure, yeah.
You know, you use the pen, it runs out of ink, and you're like, okay, yeah, See you later. You know, and then there's high quality stuff. It costs a little bit more, but in terms of a marketing point of view, and you know, we're obviously trying to push the IASIS brand and have people you know, understand who we are and what we do, and what better way than to, you know, distribute quality swag.
Absolutely.
That we'll use, reuse, gift to other people, so forth. Going way back to the very beginning of IASIS, I used to come over as a trainer, and every year they were giving out these lovely pad folios, you know, the leather look to them, you know, engraved kind of with the IASIS logo, and that was fantastic. I ended up with quite a few of them. I give them to my manager, give them to my manager's manager.
Absolutely.
You know, and these guys are all carrying them around in meetings, and everyone else is saying, what is that? Where'd you get it? And who is IASIS? You know, I mean, wow, that's exactly what you're looking for. So, I actually think that, you know, we all like getting some swag, but I also think producing serious quality swag that's actually going to get used is really, really valuable for IASIS. And I always argue that, yeah, let's spend a little bit more and make it something that people will keep and will use and will gift and will get seen, you know.
Absolutely. I had a colleague of ours, I guess you could say, he works for another agency in my state, a younger gentleman, and he found me, you know, via social media, found out about the podcast, and then found out I not only live in the same state as he, but I work for, well, the same state he does, and I'm in the same city. And he asked me, you know, I've been doing this digital forensics now for 20 years. So he just asked me for some help, some guidance along the way. And I told him, you know, join IASIS. And he did. And he's signing up for training. Well, when I got back from Techno Security, the IASIS booth has some major, major swag. So I told him, all right, now that you're an official IASIS member, here's some stickers for you. You know, here's some official, you know, you could label your laptop like everybody does with the stickers, label your drink cup and stuff like that. So I was happy at least I recruited one person to join the organization. But it was IASIS's swag at Techno in Wilmington, North Carolina was top notch. I took a little bit for myself. I mean, I got a dedicated, I'm the podcast host, so my laptop has to have, you know, some, you know, or if not a lot of IASIS you know, stickers of representation on the back of it. You never know when you're walking through an airport or you're at an airport at Chili's or a restaurant and somebody's going to see that sticker. I mean, it just like the quarter zip you're wearing, you go, or the backpack. The backpacks at IASIS are incredible this year, or last 2 years.
Yeah.
You could spot that thing 2 miles away. Yeah, it's easy.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Absolutely. And same argument, you know, create a quality backpack that, that lasts, you know, more than just the event. Obviously, we need to give them a bag to use to keep the books in for the 2 weeks. But if it lasts long enough that they can keep it for 2 and 3 and 4 years, take it to work, take it to the gym, walk through airports with it, whatever you need to do, it's all great for the brand. And it is fantastic when you see someone, you know, sporting the logo and instant icebreaker, isn't it? And conversation starter.
100%.
And,
yeah.
You realize you've got someone with the over this side, the same branding. So
yeah, and it's great. And it's, and just to touch base on that, my wife and I were going to Iceland next week. By the time this airs, I'll probably already be back, unless there's a volcano incident. But we have a member in Iceland, and I reached out to him, and he more than welcoming. So I'm going to actually meet up with him, and you'll probably see it on my social media and IACE's social media when it's all said and done with. So it's great that, you know, you're going to a foreign land and you just got to just email somebody that's in that country, and how welcoming it is just to have a friendly face and somebody who is a peer, a colleague, and you can just, you know, easily just meet up with somebody and shoot the, as we say in the, you know, I'm not going to say the, you know, shoot the shit, Kyle edited that out, but just a, you know, hang out with them, meet them, and talk further. So then that's the importance. Networking with IACES is probably the biggest takeaway you can have in this organization globally. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, if I may, I'll share a brief story with you just on that, because, you know, obviously you've been involved with IACES for so long. You make so many great contacts. Been going over to the European events, so you meet so many great people over there as well. But yeah, having a world worth of contacts available to you when you know, have a problem you need to solve, or you need a contact in a local area, is so valuable. But I just want to share one story where, you know, I basically took to the next level, courtesy of a member, Eddie Gariki, over in the Netherlands.
Absolutely.
You know, I had a strategic reason to want to go over to that part of the world. I was already going over for IACES training, and I touched base with Eddie, and I said, hey, is there any way, you know, I could come visit you at your agency, and our agencies have some things in common. Well, Eddie, he was amazing. He went and lined up an itinerary for me of a week, met with every agency over there that you know is relevant to the field. He even lined up a meeting for me with the Netherlands Forensic Institute, which would have been amazing, but it was also the same week, around the same time when the Malaysian Airlines flight was shut down. Going over the Eastern Europe there, and so they actually did all the forensics of that, you know, the crash and everything after that, so they had to kind of cancel all the appointments that were coming in. But but that's the kind of thing that can happen for you in your role. You know, you can be visiting other members in other parts of the world, and I would absolutely do that for Eddie or anybody else who's coming to my part of the world. So you know, so grateful that he was able to do that for me, and it was a very, you know, fantastic educational week, you know, that he was more than happy to put together for me. You know, I don't think people sort of think of that very often. It's like, you know, hey, let's help each other out a little bit. And just amazing, and something I never could have pulled off on my own without, you know, firstly knowing Eddie really well, but also just having, you know, knowing who to talk to. So yeah, really, really valuable. And I encourage all members to, you know, leverage the network that we have here. And as a board, we always kind of think of more ways. Hey, we have all these members, what else can we be doing?
Sure.
You know, so if you can think of other services and things that we can offer, you know, please reach out and let us know what else we can be doing to help members.
Yeah, and I got just a quick tidbit on Eddie. Every year this time, my wife and I, we do our wedding anniversary trip. So we try to always find stuff in the States, outside the States. Last year we did Europe, and I reached out to Eddie because we were in Amsterdam. And Eddie, the timing wasn't right to meet up, but I, just like I share my itinerary with the U.S. Embassy just in case anything goes bad, I was like, Eddie, here's our itinerary here in your country. Can you give me tips and tricks on, you know, I know the bike lanes in Amsterdam and stuff like that. So I don't want to culturally upset anybody. And he laid everything out for me. It was perfect recommendations. So just a little shout out to Eddie again on that one. Everybody internationally so far that I've reached out to, perfect. And you know, come to South Carolina, I'll take care of you.
Fantastic.
Darren, Mr. Chairman, we've covered a lot here, I just want to circle back real quick. We talked about the event being in downtown Melbourne, close to restaurants. Let's talk cuisine, food. You know, I know, you know, what Americans eat. What is it, if you have international students or anything, what is it that they, what do they have to try? What's some good authentic Australian cuisine for people to try out?
Well, it's nothing you're going to find at the Outback Steakhouse, that's for
right.
Sure.
Yeah, cheese fries, Blaze, Foster's that's beer, yeah.
Kind of dispel that myth for a start, yes. No, honestly, what you'll find in Melbourne is very authentic food from all over the world. To be honest, you know, Australia being very multicultural, sort of very open historically, you know, in terms of borders and bringing in, you know, skilled labor and everything else. Yeah. There's a lot of businesses here, a lot of restaurants, you know, mar and par businesses that are run. You'll see less chains, that's for sure.
Good.
We certainly have chains. You know, you have McDonald's and everything else, you know, Burger King's and so forth. But Subway. But we you know, we have many, many more just independent restaurants. And you know, the food is far more authentic than what I've seen in sort of other parts. So I think that'll be great for anyone visiting. And you know, we're in Asia, so you know there's very good Asian food. I'll be taking a group at the first opportunity to one of my favorite places, Hu Tong Dumpling Bar, where we get fantastic dumplings, and it's always a great night. So you know, and as I said, in the Melbourne city, you've got all your various regions. If you like Italian food, you can walk up to Lygon Street, and it's just an entire street of Italian restaurants. You know, but they'll literally haggle with you in the streets about you know, a free bottle of wine and free dessert and everything else. It's fantastic. You know, we've got a Chinatown street right in the middle of the CBD. There's a Greek sort of region as well, and so whatever you're looking for, you can get. You don't have to you know, walk outside of that sort of, you know, 6x6 block of the city. So it's pretty convenient. I think everyone will you know, really appreciate the food while they're here. And it's just the one difference is sort of table service. The staff here, they won't hassle you unless you want them to. You know, if you need more service, you have to let them know. Yeah. Otherwise, they're just going to leave you to enjoy your evening. You know, they may hurry up eventually if they need the table or something like that. But otherwise, they're just going to let you enjoy your meal. But you know, I've seen Americans that have visited and have stood there and wondered why they haven't had a drink of ice, you know, this big, and why it hasn't been refreshed every you know, 10 minutes or something. And
we like our refills and we love our ice. My goodness, we love our ice and our refills.
Just small cultural things like that, I think.
Speaking of cultural things, and I think I'll let you go after this one. In recent events, we had the, you know, the Olympics happened. I never knew breakdancing was so huge in Australia.
Neither did I.
I'm not going to say anything about the break dancer, but that was, I mean, talk about a cultural phenomenon. Australia is on the map, whether you like it or not, for break dancing. So I always thought this was a 1985 United States thing, you know, but no, you guys, win or lose, medal or not, Australia is in the epicenter of breakdancing in the international realm. So, hats off to you. Put that in your, another feather in your cap of things Australia is known for now.
Well, I mean, you know, as they say, good advertising, bad advertising,
it's all good. Right? Absolutely.
As long as they're talking about you. So,
that's right.
Yeah, I think that individual might have done something to improve a personal brand, which is great. But I actually kind of missed a lot of the Olympics. I was living under a rock a little bit there for a while with a lot of commitments. And I had to hear about that through others. And I'm like, really? What's happened here? So I had to catch up on YouTube. And but, you know, it was my fellow directors that were letting me know all about it, and that I had some research to do into Australian breakdancing. So shout out to all Australian breakdancers. Keep it up.
Absolutely. Live the dream. Never stop dreaming. Mr. Chairman, do you have anything to close out here before we end this great podcast? Any closing remarks?
No. Not at all. I just want to thank you for your time, and of course, you know, thank you and your committee for all the work that you guys do. I think the podcast is a great initiative. I love hearing it. I listen to it all the time. I generally listen without watching the pitches. A podcast app at the gym or going for a run or something like that. And so I love hearing from those of across the organization that I already know, and also those that I haven't had a chance to meet, or other vendors who I haven't had a chance to meet yet. So they're always informative and fun and great to listen to. So I appreciate the efforts that yourself and Kyle and Rich Johnson and Zubin Medora do to make this this podcast such a success. Keep it up, please. I really enjoy the content. So yeah, just wanted to thank you.
Absolutely. And the more viewers, it goes with anything else on a business model, more viewers, the more listeners, maybe the bigger budget. I know I just got upgraded this new fancy mic. It's doing wonders for us. I think that's the only thing I had on my wish list for this fiscal year. But I appreciate the upgrade for the mic. It creates better content. It makes it easier going forward. So I do appreciate that. But our viewers, our listeners are increasing, and that's because of guests like you. So
just on that, I mean, when you talk about the equipment, I always argue this as well. Whatever tools you need to do the job, we can't pay you, but you shouldn't have to suffer with equipment that doesn't work right either. So whatever you guys need to get the work done, please let the board know, and we'll take care of it. And that goes for all of our volunteers and all of your various roles. Don't sit there thinking that you can't get what you need. Absolutely, just let us know, and we'll make sure you're taken care of. So you guys took care of me. You sent me everything I needed to set up for this today, and I really appreciated it. So it was all easy. Instructions were simple to follow. All the equipment works straight out of the box. So well done to everybody.
Yes, and I just got to say real quick plug, if you want to be a guest on the podcast, it's iasis.podcast@iasis.com. Email us. We'll get you on the show. We'll physically mail you all the equipment needed, yours to keep, and we'll have you on the show. Mr. Chairman, Darren Freestone, Melbourne, Australia. It's been a pleasure having you on, sir. This Australian event, I'm looking forward to it. I am not going myself, but I can't wait to cover it in post-production and what have you not on the various social medias. So great having you on. Good morning to you. It's I guess, good evening for me. So pleasure having you on, sir.
Thank you, Oz. Thank you, everyone. And thanks to those listening as well.
Absolutely. Darren Freestone, IASIS Chairman of the Board. All right, Mr. Chairman, you have a great day. All right, take care.
Thanks, Oz. You too.
Yeah, all right.